time for Michigan's newest sports talk show, Mitten Madness.
And here he goes. Defense win championship.
Michigan sports talk from here in Battle Creek. The latest stories, the biggest games, all across the Mitten State.
That's not something to play with.
Streaming live and on demand on the 95.3 WBCK app. Your host, Dejon Hughes.
Good morning on this Saturday morning. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. Welcome back into Mitten Madness. We're about to go through an hour's worth of talking about what is happening in the state of Michigan in the sports realm. Hopefully you guys had a fantastic week. My week was great up until, well, the end, and then things got crazy. Maybe I'll tell you a little bit about that. Maybe I won't. But there's tons to get into in the sports world. Talking about our Pistons, how things are looking for them in the playoffs as those got started for them in their first round series against the Orlando Magic. The Detroit Tigers, are they going to heat up? Are they going to start to put it together and make a run and be like that Tigers team that we saw from the season before? There have been glimpses of the things that people want to see. They're going to do some NFL draft and some transfer portal talk for both college football and college basketball before wrapping things up and getting into our picks. This week, lacrosse had a couple competitive games that we could have won, and well, one of them got canceled due to thunderstorms, so we got to make that up later on in May. And then the other one we did not do as well as we would like, so that one hurt a little bit. And then another game we lost, three tough games, well, two and a half tough games really within the week. And then, I mean, everyday work stress, you know how that goes. I mean, you know, everybody goes to work and handles the business every single day and deals with those things that bother them there. So I have those same issues. People, don't worry. I'm just simply bonding with you. And then today has been absolute mayhem. Here I am thinking I'm going to have a nice little chill day at work. For the most part, it has been. I worked ahead this week and got a lot out of the way before, you know, having to settle in and do this. And then right before getting ready to record for Mid Madness, somebody uses the bathroom here and the urinal stops. It just stops working correctly. Like, literally, it's just flushing water and flushing and flushing and flushing. Won't stop. Water's just running at a nonstop pace. So we had to shut the water off in the building. And it's just been a mayhem here at the end of this week. So don't worry. I am feeling the pain, but I'm excited to talk about sports because there's a ton coming up this weekend. But now that we've gotten through the obligatory welcome back, it's time for us to drop into what is going on with our Pistons. Team leaders, the stats have been adjusted ever so slightly as Cade Cunningham averages 23.9 points per game, 9.9 assists, 3.7 turnovers, shooting 46.1% from the field in 33.9 minutes per game, 19.5 points per game on 65% shooting and 10.5 rebounds in 28.2 minutes for Jalen Duren. Asir Thompson still 2 steals, 1.5 turnovers in 26 minutes. And Isaiah Stewart, 1.6 blocks, 0.3 steals, 5 rebounds in his time. 117.8 points per game, 45.6 rebounds, 27.8 assists as the team looks to have success here in the playoffs. And, well, things were a little interesting for them to start off. Magic were able to come into Detroit and take game one behind a 23-9 game from Paolo Banchero, who shoots 8 for 15 from the field, 5 of 7 from the free throw line for 23 points. He grabbed 9 boards as well. Wendell Carter Jr. had 5 assists, no turnovers in 37 minutes of play. The Magic shoot 49-29-74 in their splits, only 12 turnovers, grabbed 45 rebounds, led for 97% of the game, their largest lead being 13. Meanwhile, the Pistons, on the other hand, basically was K'd by himself. Cade, 39 points, 13 of 27, 10 of 11 from the free throw line, 7 rebounds from Jalen Duren. Cade Cunningham, 4 assists, 3 turnovers in 40 minutes. The Pistons shoot 40, 31, 76 in their splits. Turned it over 14 times, only grabbed 39 rebounds. Did not lead at all in this game. But then things got very different in the next game. The Pistons were definitely on a mission and wanted to come out and make sure that they handled business and were able to even things up before they headed on the road. And after another 27-11 game behind Cade Cunningham, that is exactly what happened. He goes 11 of 19 from the field, 4 of 8 from the free throw line. He dishes out 11 assists, grabs 7 or picked up 7 turnovers as well in 37 minutes. Tobias Harris led the squad with 11 rebounds. Pistons shoot 46, 23, 58. Turned it over 23 times, grabbed 57 rebounds, led for 92% of the game, largest lead being 27. Meanwhile, Jalen Suggs led the Magic with 19 points, 7 of 18 from the field, 2 for 2 from the stripe, 7 rebounds from Franz Wagner, and 8 assists, 4 turnovers in 34 minutes for Paolo Banchero. The Magic shoot 33, 25, 72, turned it over 19 times, grabbed 42 rebounds, led for 2% of the game, their largest lead being just 1. And I would imagine, I'm trying to find out when that lead was. I'm not going to be able to track it down, but they didn't lead by much. They led by 2 at one point in the game, and that's the only lead that they had, and it did not last very long before the Pistons were able to run away with this game. The Pistons were able to handle business, winning 98-83 in game 2, preparing for game 3, which game 3 is going to be later today at 1 p.m. So shortly after we get done talking here, viewable on Peacock and NBC. They're giving the Pistons a 60.9% chance to win this game on the road. The Pistons were 28-13 when traveling away from Little Caesars Arena during the regular season. The Magic were 25-15 at home, though, inside the Kia Center. So this will be an interesting matchup. When we look at how these games went during the regular season, they split both home and home. So they both won a game in their home arena, and they both lost a game in their home arena against each other. So now this game looks like they're giving the Pistons a slight advantage, maybe because Jonathan Isaac is a game-time decision with a knee injury. But I won't talk too much about this game because I will be diving deeper into this during the picks down the road. But I mean, looking at the first two games, something really glaring pops out. 76% from the free throw line, 14 turnovers, only 39 rebounds in game 1. You lose game 1 when you lost the turnover battle, the rebound battle, and you barely won the free throw battle. And you got a lot more free throws. You doubled up their free throws. They had 19 free throws. You had 38. You only make 29 of those 38. You lose the game by 11. If you make 9 of those, maybe you make a bucket or two more, you win the game. You got to help yourself out in every possible way. But losing the turnover battle, leaving 9 points on the board, and losing the rebounding battle, it doesn't help you out in any circumstance. Then you look in the very next game. Sure, you win this game by 15. But when we look at the metrics, there's some glaring pieces. 58%. You only get 24 free throws, and you only make 14 of them. When you only get that low amount of number of free throws, you got to make every single one count. You got to cash in, and it starts at the free throw line. Those are gimmies. They're easy. That's why they're called free throws. That's why it's called a charity stripe. You're supposed to take them and run away with them. You can't be cashing in at a 58% clip. It's not good enough to win a championship or really advance out of the first round. They're going to continue to have trouble with the Magic until they can shoot better from the free throw line, especially if you're going to go 6 for 26 from the three-point line. You got to supplement that somewhere else. 23 turnovers, not a good number. Sure, it's okay against the Magic, who had 19 turnovers in this same game and weren't able to get out into transition and make you pay for it. But you turn the ball over that many times against the Raptors or the Cavaliers, yeah, kiss your playoffs goodbye. Both those teams will take all of those fast break points and run away with them with no hesitation and be happy with the outcome that they're going to get and basically feel like you gifted them the series. So you got to clean up the turnovers. You got to clean up the free throws. And, I mean, much better in the rebound department in game 2, grabbing 57 rebounds. So you were able to limit them to one shot per possession. You were able to grab some offensive rebounds and give yourself second chance opportunities. The more rebounds, the better, because it comes down to possession. Who has the ball and how often they have the ball, and are they scoring on as many possessions as possible? So when you get more rebounds, you have more possessions, more opportunities to score. You have to grab rebounds, shoot better from the three-point line and the free throw line, and you got to limit your turnovers. Those are the three things that are really kind of glaring at me about the Pistons and making me question how things could go for them moving forward. We do know that there will be a game 4 and 5. So taking a look at game 4 as well, which is also going to be down in the Kia Center. As of right now, they're giving the Pistons a 60.8% chance to win this game. That's Monday, April 27th. This game will also be on NBC and Peacock, a 39.2% chance for Orlando. Jonathan Isaac, obviously still a game-time decision, so there's no telling if he'll play in the previous game or in this game. And if the Pistons are to win both of these games and they're headed back home with a 3-1 series lead into Game 5, a very good chance that this series is a gentleman's sweep. Now, if they split these two games as well and they go back 2-2, the Pistons are going to want to win Game 5 to try and win Game 6 and end the whole thing in 6 rather than playing and going to 7. But with the way that this series looks so far, 7 is a serious possibility in this series. Although, as a somewhat home Pistons fan, you know how it gets when I'm on this show. I play a little bit of the homer here. I would love to see them get it done in 5 or 6. 5 would be would be optimal. Continue to get rest. Continue to be able to scout and watch teams. And also let the Cavs and the Raptors beat up on each other and take out some of the wind out of their sails and maybe make that series a little bit easier for the Pistons if they were to win in 5 with that added rest while those two teams really give each other their all and beat up on each other. So I'm looking forward to that. But then also looking into Game 5, which will be on Wednesday, but the time is to be determined at the moment. It would be a home game for the Pistons at Little Caesars Arena. They're giving the Pistons a 76.9% chance, just 23.1% chance for Orlando. So ESPN has the Pistons winning it in 5. So that would be lovely, but there's only one way to find out. Peeking around and looking how things are going, Cleveland leads the Cavaliers 2-1 with Game 4 coming on Sunday, April 26th at 1 p.m. Atlanta leads the Knicks 2-1 with Game 4 coming on Saturday, today, later at 6 p.m. The Celtics are tied with the 76ers. Game 3 is going to be, was yesterday, 7 p.m., so those of you guys already know how that turned out as I'm speaking in forward tense, recording this on Friday. Thunder lead the Suns 2-0. Their game later today, 3:30 p.m. Lakers Rockets. Lakers lead them 2-0. Their game 3 was last night, 8 p.m. Nuggets and Timberwolves 2-1, 8:30 p.m. Their game later today for game 4. And then the Spurs and Trailblazers tied at 1. Their game was last night, 10:30 p.m. Like, as I mentioned before, I would love for the Raptors to move on for the Pistons. But we'll see kind of what happens as all these matchups are kind of really playing out how some people thought and maybe not. I mean, no one probably thought the 76ers or the Trailblazers had a chance against the Celtics and Spurs, but they're deadlocked at 1 apiece. Then the Magic and Pistons is an interesting series, let alone the Lakers and Rockets 2-0. So we'll keep touch on how the NBA is looking, but we're going to head over to the baseball diamond, talk about the Tigers before we move on with more Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. Yeah. Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes. And we're moving on to the Comerica Park Baseball Diamond to talk about our Detroit Tigers. Let's start over in the standings where we always start. And let's start at the top of the AL Central. The Tigers find themselves back in first place in the division, 14-12, tied with the Guardians, who are also 14-12. The Twins sit a game and a half back at 12-13. The White Sox are 10-15 at 3.5 games back. And the Royals, 8-17, 5.5 games back. Look at the league overall. The Tigers sitting third in the American League, atop of the entire league. The New York Yankees, 16-9. The Rays are 13-11, 2.5 games back, along with the Guardians and Tigers. Then the Rangers, Athletics are both 3 games back at 13-12. Looking over at the National League, the Braves, 18-8. The Padres, 17-8, along with the Dodgers, both 0.5 game back. The Reds, 16-9, and so are the Cubs at 1.5 games back. Looking at the league overall, that pits the Tigers still in that middle range. In fact, they are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12th in the league at 14-12. They're only 4 games back from the Braves, who sit at the top of the league. So it's not like there's a lot of separation in the MLB right now. Everything's really tight, but the Tigers are really starting to catch a little bit of a groove here as we're about to pop back and look at the last week before we look at the week ahead when we get here after looking at the leaders, which is Kevin McGonigal leading the batting average department with a .319, his on-base percentage at a .407, slugging percentage sitting at .500. And then you have Kerry Carpenter with 5 home runs, leading the squad with a .212 batting average and RBIs of 13. Meanwhile, Dylan Dingler is the one batting runs in like crazy. He's got 19 of them. He's got 5 homers as well. His batting average sitting at .263. On the pitching side, Casey Mize now leads the earned run average ERA category at 2.51. He's got 2 wins and 32 strikeouts on the year. Meanwhile, Skubal leads the wins with 3. He's got 38 strikeouts and a 2.72 ERA. He leads the team with 38 strikeouts as well. The team has 114 runs on the year, good for 13th. Batting average of .246, good for 12th. Their on-base percentage sits at .327, also good for 12th. And their slugging percentage of .390 is good for 11th. Meanwhile, on the pitching side, the ERA of 3.65, sitting at 10th in the league. Quality starts of 13, tied for 2nd. Their whip of 1.30, tied for 14th. And their opponent batting average is .236, good for 13th in the league. When we take a look at their schedule over the last week, we get to have a little bit of some celebration we can talk about. The weekend series was against Boston. They lost the first one, 1-0 in 10 innings. And then they bounced back in games 2 and 3, winning 4-1 with Skubal on the mound, and then winning 6-2 with Valdez on the mound. And then Monday, things didn't go quite as well as they would like. Tried to sneak a series win against Boston and steal one. They ended up tying the series as they lost 8-6 in game 4. So Boston wins the bookends. The Tigers won the middles. And then the Tigers started the next series on Tuesday this week with a loss to Milwaukee, 12-4. The bats were absolutely going for the Brewers as the Tigers weren't able to quiet them down at all. That put them at .500 at 12-12. And then they bounced back for 2 big wins to push themselves over the .500 mark once again in the season. Their 5-2 win on Wednesday for Casey Mize, and then a 5-4 win on Thursday for Herder. Herder's now 2-0 on the season. Mize improves to 2-1. Skubal improved to 3-2 in his last outing. So then this upcoming weekend, last night, they started a series against the Reds with Valdez on the mound pitching against Abbott, 6:40 p.m. on Fox. Later today, 7:15 p.m., Flaherty against Singer. And then 1:40 p.m. tomorrow, Montero against Lauder. All those games on the road against Cincinnati. And then they stay on the road, picking up again on Tuesday at Atlanta, 7:15, Casey Mize against Lopez. Wednesday, 7:15, Skubal will be on the mound against undecided at the moment. And then Thursday, 12:15 p.m., Valdez against Holmes. And then Friday, they start another series, a 3-game series against the Rangers. 6:40 p.m., Flaherty against Gore. 7:15 p.m., Fox against Montero. That will be on Fox, Montero against Rocker. And then Sunday, 7:20 p.m. on Peacock, Mize against Leader. Looking at how some of these games went, especially want to take a look at the overtime game. Extra innings game. Obviously nothing getting done until the bottom of the 10th, where they gave Whitlock the win there. Currently the series is tied 2-2 on the year. We know that they will play again in the regular season. Those games coming up soon, actually going to be on the 4th, 5th, and 6th of May. So an opportunity for the Tigers to steal away the regular season series overall. Looking at the Tigers and how batting went for them, 0-3 for Torres, 1-4 for McGonigal, 2-4 for Jones, 0-3 for both Dingler and Verling. Riley Green went 0-1. Perez and Torkelson 0-for-4. Lee went 0-for-3, and Javi Baez went 1-for-3. Casey Mize, 6.2 innings, gave up 3 hits, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. Finnegan also had an inning pitch, just 1 walk. Herder, 0.1 of an inning, 3-for-3, didn't give up any runs or any hits at all. And then Vest came in, 1.1 innings pitch, gave up a hit, gave up a walk, and had 2 strikeouts. Seeing if I can see the scoring play, Yoshida singled to right, Duren scored, and Mayer to second. That ended the game in the bottom of the 10th. So the Tigers kind of losing a tough one there before they bounce back. And, I mean, you know, with Scuba on the mound, it's safe to say the Tigers are bound to win just about any game, especially when he gets some help from the bats. McGonigal, 2-for-5, a run and an RBI. Torres goes 1-for-5. Keith, 1-for-3. Dingler, 0-for-2. Green, 0-for-2. Torkelson, 0-for-4. Carpenter goes 2-for-3, a run, a home run, and 2 RBIs. Perez, 0-for-3 with a run. Javi Baez, 1-for-4 with a run. And then Rogers, 1-for-3 with an RBI. Skubal, 6 innings pitch, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 10 strikeouts. And then Holton and Jansen came in relief for him. Boston obviously had a struggle bus of a day. Abreu got their 1 run of the day. No RBI attributed there. Bello, 4 innings pitch, 5 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 walks, 4 strikeouts. Then Moran came in, 3 innings, 1 hit, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. And the Tigers were able to steal game 2 of this series. Then they get game 3 as well, winning that one 6-2. Jones goes 1-for-3 with a run, a home run, and an RBI. Carpenter 1-for-1. Torres 1-for-4 with a run and an RBI. Verling 2-for-5, 2 runs. Dingler 4-for-5, a run, and a home run, and 4 RBIs in this game. Riley Green 1-for-4, 0-for-4 for Perez and Lee. 0-for-3 for Torkelson. 2-for-4 for Baez with a run. Valdez, 6 innings pitched, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 7 strikeouts as the Tigers pick up a huge win here as well. And obviously, like I said, they lose game 4, so they were able to even things out there. Kind of want to see what happened in this 12-4 game against the Brewers because they had the bats going. Looking at the Brewers here, Turang, 2-for-5, 4 RBIs. Contreras, 2-for-5, 1 run, 2 RBIs. Bowers, 2-for-5, an RBI. Sanchez, 1-for-5, a run and an RBI. Mitchell, 2-for-5, 2 runs and an RBI. Rengifo, 1-for-3, a run and an RBI. Ortiz, 0-for-1 with a run. Frelick, 1-for-3 with 2 runs and an RBI. Matos, 0-for-1. Hamilton, 4-for-5 for 2 runs. Perkins, 0-for-2, 2 runs and an RBI. And then Jones, 1-for-1. Harrison, 3 innings, 4 hits, 1 earned run, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. Anderson, 2 innings, 1 hit, 1 strikeout. McGill, a strikeout. Ashby, 2 walks and 2 strikeouts. Both of them pitched an inning. And then Woodford pitched 2 innings, 4 hits, 3 earned runs, 2 strikeouts as the Tigers struggled getting the bats going. 0-for-2 for Jones, 0-for-3 for Carpenter. 1-for-2 for Torres, 1-for-1, and a run for Perez. 2-for-5, a run and an RBI for McGonigal. Verling, 1-for-4, 2 RBIs. 0-for-5 for Dingler, 1-for-3 for Green, and a run. 1-for-3 for both Torkelson and Lee. And Javi Baez, 0-for-3. Keith goes 1-for-1 with a run. Montero, 5.2 innings pitched, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. De Jesus, 1.1 innings pitch, 7 hits, 3 earned runs, or excuse me, 5 earned runs, 2 walks, 7, or 1 strikeout. Seabold, 1 inning pitched, 2 hits, 2 earned runs, and Rogers, 1 inning pitched, 2 hits, 1 strikeout. Tigers lose this one big, 2-4, but then bounce back, win the next 2, 5-2, 5-4, got the bats going to a significant amount there as they head into a tough weekend series against Cincinnati, which we're going to take a quick peek at to see if they have I mean, they're putting this one pretty much down the middle. 49.9% chance for the Tigers, 50.1% chance for the Reds. First game, 48.4% chance for the Tigers, 51.6% chance for the Reds in game two, and 42.9% chance and 57.1% chance. 57.1 for the Reds, 42.9 for the Tigers in game three. So looking like the Tigers might get swept, but a very uphill battle and tough chance for them to go out and win this series. But that doesn't mean they can't. They have to get the bats going. The pitching has been relatively solid. And, you know, besides the few lapses, I mean, giving up 8 runs and then turning around and giving 12 runs in back-to-back games, not good. But outside of that, limiting teams to 1 run, 1 run, 2 runs, 2 runs, 4 runs. That's the kind of stuff you need. So when we come back from the break, we'll be talking about some college sports with more Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Mike Rowe on the skills gap and how a student organization known as Skills USA is trying to fill it.
So the thing about Skills USA that's so cool, and the reason that my foundation has supported it for years, is that it's deliberately and intentionally focused on celebrating a skill. 3 million jobs right now exist in the trades and transportation and commerce. The skills gap is real. Training kids and getting them excited to do the jobs that exist ought to be job one. Skills USA does that in a big way. It's about excellence and competition and being good at what you do, and eventually through all of that, learning who you are. Skills USA is working.
Learn more at microworks.com and skillsusa.org.
Welcome back into Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. We're going to talk about some college sports really quick. We're going to take a quick peek at the transfer tracker for college basketball. Some movements have been made. Then we're going to pop over to the NFL draft quickly. Just earlier today, as I'm recording this on Friday, so yesterday for you all, Cincinnati 7'2" center Mustafa Thiam has committed to play for the reigning NCAA champion Michigan Wolverines. He tells ESPN Thiam averaged 12.8 points, 7.1 rebounds, and 1.6 blocks last season, and serves as a major transfer portal pickup for Coach Dusty May. Looking to see more action within the Big Ten, Wisconsin's guard John Blackwell commits to Duke. He told ESPN Blackwell, who averaged 19.1 points and earned all Big Ten honors, was the best guard to enter the portal this spring. Duke needed a big-time scorer, and it just landed the best one on the market. Nebraska loses Eugenius Yaroshevich. Nebraska big man has entered the transfer portal. He played just one game this past season due to a back injury and is hoping to qualify for a medical hardship waiver. Averaged 16.2 points at Central Michigan in 24-25. St. Mary's center Andrew McKeever is committed to Iowa. His agency GSL Sports Group told ESPN 7'3" center averaged 8.2 points, 9.2 rebounds, and 1.8 assists per game. Number 2 offensive rebounder in the country per KenPom. Really intriguing profile for the Hawkeyes. Kentucky guard Jasper Johnson commits to Oregon, sources told ESPN. Former top 20 recruit, averaged 4.9 points as a freshman in Lexington. The 6'5" guard gives Dana Altman a high ceiling offensive talent. He's represented by CAA basketball / Antonio Russell. Boston College forward Bowden Kapke commits to Nebraska. So he posted that himself on social media, so there was no need to get any sources there. Tennessee guard Bishop Boswell commits to Maryland. His agent Nate Conley tells ESPN this is a pivotal addition for the Terps heading into the next season, as Boswell started 33 games at Tennessee and shot 38.5% from three. The former SC top 100 prospect is looking to make a change and won a state championship in high school and advanced to the Elite Eight in the NCAA tournament with Tennessee this past season. Illinois guard Ty Rogers enters the transfer portal, the redshirted 24-25 season, then missed the 25-26 season with a knee injury from the summer. Michigan State got a center not too long ago. I was hoping to find it, but there's so many moves within the transfer portal that's hard to track them all down. Three transfers in one day for Indiana. Notre Dame guard Marcus Burton, Duke guard Darren Harris, and Georgia Tech guard Jaden Mustaf all going to Indiana. I am not able to find that Michigan State transfer, and for now we'll leave it at that. But do know that both teams are making moves within the transfer portal, so there's tons of happenings there. Both of those teams will look slightly different when the next basketball season comes around, as obviously Michigan will be trying to defend that title, and I mean, as you know, Michigan State will be trying to get back into the glory world that they found themselves in once before. Turning things over to the NFL draft, as everyone expected, Fernando Mendoza went number one out of Indiana. He goes to the Las Vegas Raiders. And then looking at some of the other picks that were made, going number three overall to the Cardinals, Notre Dame running back Jeremiah Love. Ohio State goes back-to-back as Carnell Tate goes to the Titans. And then linebacker Arvell Reese goes to the Giants. And then they go seven as well. Sonny Styles, linebacker, goes to the Commanders in Washington. Caleb Downs goes 11 to the Cowboys, the safety. Penn State gets a guard at 14. Aloviveiga Ioni out of Penn State going to the Ravens. Oregon's tight end Kenyon Sadiq is going to the Jets at 16. USC's Mekhi Lemon is going to the Eagles at 20. Oregon's Dylan Thenemann, the safety, is going to the Bears at 25. Indiana's Omar Cooper Jr., the receiver, is going to the Jets at 30. And that's really all the Big Ten from round one. Rounds two and three coming up soon. But, I mean, looking through maybe the best available, we'll see some more Big Ten here. Looking overall, Denzel Boston comes in at four, the receiver out of Washington. Defensive tackle Caden McDonald out of Ohio State coming in at number five, best available. Illinois, Gabe Jockus, the edge, coming in at 16. Oregon's Emmanuel Pregnon, the guard, coming in at 19. Iowa's Gennings Dunker, the tackle, coming in at 22. That's just on page one. Looking at page two, you got Michigan's Derek Moore coming in at 28. Max Clair from Ohio State, the tight end, coming in at 32. D'Angelo Pons, the cornerback, coming in at 34 out of Indiana. Another Indiana wide receiver, Elijah Surratt, coming in at 41. And then Penn State safety, Zaki Wheatley, coming in at 50. Number three, we got another Michigan guy popping up here. But first, 52, Caleb Tiernan out of Northwestern, the tackle. Jashaun Barnum, the edge, out of Michigan, coming in at 56. The wide receiver, Jacoby Lane, out of USC, coming in at 58. Davison Igbinosin, the cornerback, out of Ohio State, coming in at 59. The edge, Dennis Sutton, out of Penn State, coming in at 64. Center, Logan Jones, out of Iowa, coming in at 67. I skipped right over safety, Kamari Ramsey, out of USC, coming in at 66. And, I mean, through three rounds, plenty and plenty of Big Ten names. But, I mean, overall, it's been tough for Michigan and Michigan State. Not a single Michigan State name mentioned early on in the first three rounds. Obviously, in round one, Rayshon Benny comes in at 100 for Michigan, the D tackle. And this is just the best available. Drew Aller comes in at 97 out of Penn State. Nick Singleton comes in at 89 out of Penn State. Drew Shelton out of Penn State comes in at 84. Emmett Johnson out of Nebraska, running back, comes in at 93. But I'm going to scroll through this list here and try and keep you occupied a little bit until we can find a Michigan State name. Oh, finally, here we go. Matt Golbin. Matt Golbin comes in at 125, the center out of Michigan State. So a tough time for Michigan State in the football ranks. They're still trying to put things together in the basketball ranks as well. And then really there's not a lot to talk about with the state of Michigan at the moment. We touched briefly on the women's basketball team coming back. WNBA is going to be making a return. We do know that the ownership group that has the rights and brought this new team back in 2029 has the rights and naming rights to the Shock. So we would love to see the Detroit Shock return. We'd love to see the color scheme return, maybe a revamped version for branding and jerseys and such. But for the most part, we want to see the Detroit Shock back. We don't know if that's going to happen, but we'll find out in the next coming of years. But watch the NFL draft over the next couple of days. See if there's more Michigan and Michigan State names called than what are on the board. The Big Ten seeming to going to show out over the next couple of rounds as tons of names were listed from within the conference. But when we come back from the break, we're doing our picks here with more Mid Madness on 95.3 The
People.
Welcome back to Mid Madness here on 95.3 The Ticket. I'm your host, Dejon Hughes, and it's time for my favorite part of the show, the picks. And of course, you can play along with the picks every single week using the chat feature in the 95.3 The Ticket app. All you have to do is load up your app, click that chat feature, and then listen for the picks that we're going to be doing that week. Listen to me do my deliberation, my research, my thoughts, and all the knowledge I have about ball and what I know and don't know. Right. And then, of course, you're going to hear me make my picks and why I think that they're undoubtedly going to be correct and why they're going to turn out that way. And then you have the liberty of doing your own research, your own deliberation, having your own thoughts and knowledge, and then deciding those picks and why you think they will undoubtedly be that way. Submit them into the chat feature on the 95.3 The Ticket app and see if you know ball better than I have. I do. Well, there's only a handful of people out there that can probably say they know ball better than me, and I don't know if you're one of them. You got to challenge me and see if you do. So that chat feature in the 95.3 The Ticket app is open, and we would love to see your picks in there and see if you're able to bring me down. I know somebody out there knows ball. Show me you know ball as well. Last week, I had a little bit of an interesting week. I think for the first time ever, I had a tie in this. So with the Tigers splitting their series with the Red Wings, I marked that down as a tie. Malott got a TKO against Burns. The Defenders beat the Battle Hawks. The Storm beat the Stallions. But then the Phillies got swept by the Braves, and the Renegades lost to the Aviators. That gave me a 3-2-1 record for last week. That bumps my overall record to 36-23-1 as I enter into this week. We got six more games loaded up for the picks this week. We are starting in the UFL. In the UFL this week, going to get things kicked off on Saturday on ESPN, 7 p.m. Later today, the Battlehawks are taking on the Storm. The Battlehawks are 2-2. The Storm are 4-0. The Storm are currently 3-point favorites, and the over-under sits at 45.5. The Storm come into the game pouring in 87 points per game, only giving up 52, a plus 35 score differential. It's great for them as they're 4-0 on a four-game win streak, and nobody seems to be getting in their way. They're going to take on the 500 2-2 Battlehawks, who have also scored 87 points this year but have given up 99 points for a negative 12 score differential. Their problem has been defense and holding teams off the scoreboard enough for them to win games, while Orlando can't quite score at the same rate as some of the other teams in the league, but their defense has been superb and has been keeping teams off of the scoreboard. An unprecedented mark, only giving up 52 points on the year, is something that no other team can say. The next best team is 19 points away, and that's the Defenders, giving up 71. A couple teams within the 80s, as the Renegades at 83, the Kings at 85, and so are the Stallions. So clearly the Storm are taking that moniker of defense wins championship seriously. And I got them winning this game as well over the Battlehawks for that same reason. If you can hold teams to a low amount of scoring and keep them off the board, it doesn't matter how many points you score, you're going to win the game. If teams are only scoring 10 points and you can score 11, you win. That's pretty much the Storm's philosophy, and they're making it happen. So I got them winning yet another game later today. Coming up tomorrow, two more games, 12 p.m., noon on ABC. The Aviators, 1-3, taking on the Gamblers from Houston, who are also 1-3. They're giving the Gamblers, excuse me, no, they are giving the Aviators a 3.5 point favorite in this game. Over under also sits at 45.5. When we look at how things have fared for these two teams early on, the Aviators have scored 93 points while they've given up 109 for a negative 16 differential. Meanwhile, the Houston Gamblers are 1-3 as well, have given up 125 points and only scored 68 for a negative 57 score differential. So obviously they're having problems all over the field. They have been able to pick up one win, but one win is nowhere near enough in the UFL if you want to be able to make the playoffs and try and make a run to be hoisting the trophy at the end of the year. Right now, I don't see it in the Gamblers, mainly because they're having problems on both sides of the ball. Sure, you can be tied at 1-3 with three other teams and try and make it out to be one of the better teams from this group, but not when you can't score. Only one team is scoring less points this year than you. That's the Birmingham Stallions, and it's only by three, and they've given up 40 less points than you have. So a completely drastic difference between those two teams, and they are sitting 5 points behind the Kings, who had only scored 73, but they've also given up 40 less points than you with 85. So serious problems for the Gamblers. Has me leaning toward Columbus. I'm going to take the Aviators to win this game as well. Our final UFL game for the week will be ABC, 3 p.m. The Kings, 1-3, taking on the Renegades, who are 3-1. The Dallas Renegades suffering their first loss last week. They pour in 109 points so far this year, only giving up 83 for a plus 26 score differential. Meanwhile, on the other side, the Kings, who are 1-3, have scored 73, only giving up 85. I think this one is pretty simple to say. The Renegades have been a far better team. The Kings are trying to find their way as, honestly, a new franchise within the UFL and a new city for the UFL, which plays its part and its roles 100% in all of this. But I think the upsetting part for all of this is the Kings have to play a Dallas Renegades team that just lost their first game of the year and is probably upset because they lost to a team that they just beat the previous week. So that's going to really sting a little bit, and it's going to play a factor in this game 100%. I think the Renegades come out and they are hunting. I think they are hungry. I think they are dominant. I think they want to make up for all of the mistakes that they made in the previous week, and they are going to do something to the Kings that should be considered possibly a war crime because it's going to be ugly. Give me the Dallas Renegades big over the Louisville Kings in this week's matchup. That's going to turn things over to the NBA for the playoffs. We'll pick things up down in Atlanta, as this game will be later today on NBC and Peacock, 6 p.m. You got the New York Knicks, who are 22-19 on the road during the regular season, taking on the Hawks, who are 24-17 at home during the regular season. So far in the playoffs, the Hawks lead this series 2-1. The Knicks won game one, 113-102, and then they lost game two by the hands of CJ McCollum, 107-106, and then lost game three by the hands of CJ McCollum, 109-108. So now they're back in State Farm Arena in Atlanta, Georgia, where Atlanta has a 45.7% chance to come out victorious, a 54.3% chance for the Knicks to come out victorious and even the series up. But I am a little hesitant to do that. I'm leaning toward giving the Hawks this game. They're at home. They have all the momentum after winning two tight games by the hands of CJ McCollum, who is a big-time shot maker and is constantly closing out games. And they know that if they head back to New York with a 3-1 cushion, they can afford to lose that game five in New York in Madison Square Garden, where it's going to be rocking. It's going to be a sold-out crowd. It's going to be crazy. And then they can come back home and close things out where they're more comfortable. They have two game leeway to play with a 3-1 lead before things get tight in a game seven. So I think I like that for them. I think that's also where their mind is. I think they run with that. Give me the Hawks in game four at home to take a 3-1 series lead back to New York with a chance to close it in game five, but most likely will close in game six back home at State Farm Arena in Atlanta, Georgia. Then we're going to move over to the Western Conference. Game four, Minnesota Timberwolves at home later today, 8:30 p.m. on ABC against the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets were 26-15 on the road, but guess what? The Timberwolves were 26-15 at home during the regular season. The Wolves have a slight advantage, a 50.1% chance, while they're giving the Nuggets a 49.9% chance in this game. Anthony Edwards, a game-time decision with an undisclosed injury. Jalen Clark, game-time decision along with Terrence Shannon Jr., which are both illness-related. This series, 2-1 in favor of the Timberwolves. The Nuggets won for game one, 116-105, then lost game two, 119-114, and then lost game three, 113-96. This is pretty much the same scenario as what we were just talking about with the Knicks and the Hawks. The Timberwolves have a chance at home as the lower seed to go up 3-1 going back on the road for game five. They have a chance to have a cushion. Whether they win game five or not, they can go home with a chance to win. There's no real pressure when you go up 3-1 in game five or game six. Game six is more comfortable because you're like, look, man, we can close this out in front of our fans. Our fans love us. They want us to be here. They want to see us win this game and move on to the next round. They're going to be loud. They're going to bring the energy. They're going to be that sixth man that we need on the extension of our team. So I like where the Timberwolves are headed. Anthony Edwards has been absolutely dominant. He hates that he was snubbed off of all of the all-star lists. He hates that he wasn't given the right to be nominated for those awards based off the 65 rule. And he feels like he should be an MVP, and he wants to prove it in the playoffs. I think this is another big game, another big opportunity for him to do that. I got the T-Wolves taking down the Nuggets and another opportunity for them to stretch out their lead. Their lead within this series to 3-1 and then close things out possibly on the road. And if they don't, they're going to head back home to the Target Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and close it out in game six. That's going to get us into our last matchup of the week. It's the Detroit Pistons on the road later today, 1 p.m., Peacock and NBC against the Orlando Magic. Pistons 28-13 on the road, Magic 25-15 at home. They're giving the Magic a 39.1% chance, Pistons a 60.9% chance. We talked earlier about how games one and two went for these two teams. I talked a bunch about how the Pistons have to limit their turnovers. I talked a bunch about how they have to grab a large amount of rebounds to give themselves more possessions, because at the end of the day, it comes down to who has possession, when they have possession, and how often they're scoring the ball. And then I talked about their shooting. Their 3-point percentage in games one and two in the 30s, the low 30s at that, nowhere near high enough to be competitive in the playoffs. During the regular season, that will win you tons of games. In the playoffs, everybody kicks it up another notch. Everybody plays a little bit harder. Everybody wants to win a little bit more. So you have to up your ante, and you have to play better. You have to shoot better. You have to defend better. So shooting low 30s from outside the arc will not get it done in the playoffs. They're going to have to shoot better from there. And listen, shooting 50 and 60, low 70% from the free throw line really won't get it done, because late game teams will start to follow you. And if you're hitting free throws, you will lose games because they will come back and hit shots. You have to be able to shoot well from all levels of the floor and all aspects of the game if you want to win an NBA championship and progress within the playoffs. So I think that they have it moving forward, but they're going to have to limit their turnovers, grab more rebounds, and shoot better from the field. I'm going to take Pistons in game three. Make sure you're tuned in to 95.3, the ticket, all weekend long and all week long. Tons of Tigers games going to be played for your listening pleasure as they look to jumpstart their season and really get going as the bats are now moving. Don't forget, I've got the Storm, the Aviators, the Renegades, the Pistons, the Hawks, and the Timberwolves headed into this weekend. We'll be back next week to talk more mid-madness here on 95.3 The Ticket.
Join Dejon Hughes every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. for Mitten Madness on 95.3 WBCK. Miss the show or want to run it back? Stream Mitt and Madness on demand on the WBCK app. Sponsored by AirwayCashForJunkCars.com.